Hey there, it's Dr. Heidi. You're listening to It's Not Normal, It's Toxic, a podcast geared towards the things you may be misunderstanding about the difficult relationships in your life. I did not understand it when I was in it, but I definitely understand it now, and I want to share that understanding with you so that you too can find the courage you didn't know you had to make the changes you didn't think you could make. Today, I want to welcome to the show Kate Anthony. She is the host of the critically acclaimed New York Times recommended podcast, The Divorce Survival Guide, and the creator of the groundbreaking online coaching program, Should I Stay or Should I Go?, which helps women make the most difficult decision of their lives using coaching tools, relationship education, geeky neuroscience, community support, and deep self-work. Kate empowers women to find their strength, their passion, and confidence, even in the most disempowering circumstances, and helps them move forward with concrete plans, putting their children at the center, not the middle of all their decisions. Hey, welcome back, everybody. You're listening to It's Not Normal, It's Toxic, Rid Your Life of Toxic People. This is Dr. Heidi. Today, surprisingly, it's Monday, and I've had a Monday all day, but I've been super excited about having the guest that's on the show today, because we work a lot in the same field category and with the same type of person. I had the honor of being on her podcast a few months ago, and it was really fun for me to be able to talk to somebody who knows exactly, you know, where I'm sitting. So welcome to the show today, Kate Anthony. Welcome to our, well, I'm going to say survival guide. I was going to say survival guide, but that's yours. Yeah, so
that's
so
right. Welcome. It's all right.
I'll let you say that.
Like you said, we do all, you know, we do similar work with similar people. So here we all are. We are all survival guides, aren't we?
Yes. And you know what I've come to find out? If we're not surviving this, we're surviving something different. So
something.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, because I know that you and I have similarities in we switched our career to kind of follow this path.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, yes. So from that perspective, yeah, I was an actor forever. I started when I was very young. I was on Sesame Street from when I was like 3 to when I was 8, and they forced me into retirement.
Oh, I didn't know that part.
Yeah, it's true. I have like really cute pictures of it too, and a couple of videos that are on YouTube that are amazing.
I'll have to go look.
It's very strange to watch especially, you know, our generation. Right. I'm assuming we're similar age. Yeah. Right. And so like, it wasn't like there were phones recording us. There were
right. No, we didn't like, video anything. Yeah.
Right. It's not like my family certainly didn't have a Super 8. Right. Like, so it's the only recorded video of myself as a child are these Sesame Street episodes. And so the first time I saw them, I was like, oh my God, it felt like connecting with my inner child. Like, it was crazy. So anyway, so there was that. And then, so I was an actor for most of my life. I grew up in New York. I worked a lot in theater. I worked a lot in television. And when I got divorced, I was still acting. I was now in Los Angeles, and I was working on a TV show. And when I got divorced, I was like, first of all, I don't want to do this anymore. I was done with it. I think there was a lot of the things that had me outgrow my toxic marriage were the same things that had me outgrow a very toxic industry and profession.
Yeah. Well, and if you don't know in one environment, you're not going to know in the other environment. It's just part of it, right?
That's right. And when you do know in one environment, suddenly you know it in all the environments, and you're like, oh no, actually these friendships no longer work for me.
Yes.
This profession no longer works for me, right? All of these relationships that I had with whether institutions or people relied on the same level of toxicity and my codependence and lack of self-awareness, self-knowledge, self-esteem, right? And when you sort of, you know, grow up in one area, you can't not see it everywhere else.
Yes. I always say that we don't see it at all until we see it. And then once you see it,
You see it everywhere.
You can't unsee it. Yes. And it's
everywhere. Unsee it. Right. So yeah. And, you know, and I was now going to be, I had been a stay-at-home mom while also being an actor. And there was some flexibility and freedom in that. But then when I got divorced, I was like, I'm not driving my three-year-old hours around Los Angeles in rush hour traffic to auditions and callbacks that, you know, you book 1 in 100 if you're lucky.
Right.
And, you know, like I did not have that kid, by the way, who was going to sit in traffic for an hour or two. And I was just like, this doesn't, I always say like the traffic, the cost benefit traffic analysis just didn't add up. And also I was done. I was really legitimately done with it. I had grown up in theater. I was doing television. It's not the same. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't want to do it anymore. So I was like, well, what am I going to do now? And because I had been in a very toxic marriage, emotionally abusive, all of the things, but we had managed to have a really good divorce. Which I can talk a little bit more about coming up, but people kept coming to me like, cause you know, once you get divorced, then suddenly all the people around you start getting divorced. Cause it's this weird contagious thing. It's like you sort of, you know, broke down the gate and everyone's like, okay, maybe I'll step over that too, you know?
Well, and I think too, that nobody talks about it and nobody ever wants to intervene. Even if they feel like you're having trouble, they're not going to like inject themselves into your marriage. So everybody just, I think it's a big relief for people when they think, oh, okay, she did it. You know,
she did it. Maybe I can do it too. Right. Yes. Right. Exactly. And I know that when I was trying to decide whether to stay or go, I was trying to ask everyone I knew who had gotten divorced, like, how do you know? How did you figure this out? Right. And so you are right. You are kind of opening this door. And so people were coming to me, but they were particularly interested in how we could have, we were the couple that nobody could stand to be around. It was not remotely covert. It was very overt. It was very uncomfortable. It was really toxic. And so when we managed to divorce as friends and be able to kind of have this sort of friendly relationship, people were like, how did you do that? I will say it ended up being a long process because it actually crashed and burned and we've managed to rebuild it. Uh-huh. You know, but it was all in service of our son and trying to just get it right for our kid.
Yeah. Now I will say that what you just described is opposite of what most of the people that I work with, respond to that. Because sorry. That's okay. If mine was going to do the same thing, probably
Siri decided to step in and.
And maybe we should have listened to what she said. What I was going to say is mine was difficult because in public, we appeared to be, you know, this perfect thing. We had a practice together. So we always had people, you know, and we were out in the public eye, kind of like you in a different, you know, a different genre.
Sure.
But everybody would have never guessed. So then when I tried to talk to people, well, I looked like the crazy one because he was the nicest guy and he would do anything for anybody and he treats you so well and you have a new car and the kids are so blah, you know? So that's interesting because I didn't know that either.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is very different. And most people are really able to hide it so much better, but you know, and I think this speaks to the difference, you know, between say like a sociopath or a narcissist where like narcissists can kind of, they're kind of the same way in every circumstance, right? So like my ex-husband, God love him, but he is a narcissist through and through. And so he can't control himself in one environment or another. He's the same everywhere. And so, right. And not to say that your ex is a sociopath, I don't know, but they are better at hiding the behaviors in public because they know that it's not appropriate.
Right.
They'll just do it in private where it's, you know, where it's okay.
Yeah.
Quote. Okay. So it's, you know, I think we all have different experiences with this, but, so, you know, at the end of the day, I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll do this coaching thing. And I went to school for coaching and I decided I wanted to do something with divorces and helping people have harmonious divorces. Mm-hmm. And that was like 2011. So divorce coaching really hadn't quite taken off yet. Right. Like there was no certification. There was no, right. I was sort of this out here doing my thing. And, but the longer I've done it and the longer I've been around, the more I think probably similar to you, it's not the healthy, happy ones that need the help. It's not people who are able to have harmonious divorces that are the ones who need help. And there are far more of us out there who are really struggling with abuse and toxicity. And so like you, that has really become my focus, and not because that's what I necessarily set out to do, but it's where the need is the greatest.
Yep, for sure. For sure. And I think too, you know, there's this weird thought that, okay, we filed for divorce, and then for some reason we think they're going to be not themselves during the divorce process. And they're going to be not themselves during co-parenting. Because, and I don't remember exactly what we talked about, but I was divorced for mine for two years before I had to run away.
Right.
Because nothing changed. But in my head, I thought, yes, I've got the divorce papers. Yeah.
Well, yes. And that's exactly why I said that ours, it crashed and burned, because the happy divorce that we were sort of engaging in, was actually predicated upon me continuing to be the victim of his abuses, which were, you know, when we were still married, they were daily and multiple times a day. And in divorce, he, you know, it would be maybe once a week or twice a week, but it was still happening.
Yeah. Or when he was fresh out of friends and needed some attention, then you'd get the text that he needed his hammer or something like that. Right.
Something. Yes, exactly. I mean, there was one particular event that occurred that was so egregious that I just was like, I can't do this anymore. And it's not, as you said, he's being who he's always been. Mm-hmm. It's me. I am being who I have always been.
Yep.
I keep showing up for it. I keep showing up for it. And my only option now is to stop showing up for it. And I cut it off. And, you know, it was a very difficult and painful period for all of us.
I'm going to interrupt you right there because this is one of the things that my listeners need to hear. She said that he was showing up as himself. She was showing up as herself, and she figured out that she had to cut it off. Right. I do believe, and you will agree with me. So I'm not, we're trained to cater to their needs and wants because we want to avoid conflict. Right. And especially if there's kids in the environment. So I think sometimes we don't even know we have permission to cut it off,
to opt because, out.
Yeah, but if I don't text them back, they're going to be mad. And if I don't answer this right now, they're going to be mad.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
That's a training.
And if you do respond, they're going to be mad. And if you, right, this is the classic tug of war, right? It takes two people to have to be holding and pulling the rope for the game to actually happen. And if you drop your end of the rope, and it's so hard.
Until you do it.
Until you do it and you realize like, oh, wow, I'm so free.
Yeah.
I'll never be free.
I'll never forget when I was still in that stage a little bit. It was, well, I have to text him back because otherwise what's the worst that can happen? Well, I'll get 27 texts. Well, what's going to happen if you do text him back? Well, I'll get 27 texts if I text him back too. So, you know.
That's right.
Or he's going to be mad. Well, he's always mad. But we don't think that way when we are the ones that want to take the high road and we're the ones that think, oh, if we can just placate him a little bit, things will get better. But you realized one day that wasn't the deal.
Well, I realized that I was spending my life placating somebody who was not getting better and that he didn't want to get better and that no amount of
And you weren't moving forward.
And I wasn't moving forward. That is something that I know we agree on and that I talk about all the time, which is that we take all the time to physically divorce them, to legally divorce them, financially divorce from them, and we forget to emotionally divorce from them, right? Mm-hmm. Because if we keep doing the same things that we've always done, we will continue to be in the same relationship. So what's the point?
Yep.
What's the point? And so, you know, freedom for me really came when I said, actually, I'm done and you can't talk to me. And, you know, we always say that you can't talk to me that way. Well, they, as long as they're doing it, they can.
Yeah. And right? the minute it's, you tell them they can't, they know exactly what to do to override right. you. Right.
That's right.
No
that's
boundaries right. here. I'll just crush them. Right.
That's right. And I, you know, and I will say that the way I do not recommend the way that I did this, it was,
I don't recommend the way I did it either. So why are you guys listening to us? Right.
Because we made all the mistakes.
So that's it for the show.
Don't listen to somebody else. Oh my God, I love you. Right. We made all the mistakes and we're here to help you not make this mistake.
We made them for you.
Right. You know, what I did was I wrote a blog post in rage and anger mm-hmm. about this. And I stand by what I wrote to this day. I've reread it and been like, oh, that was a little long and that might be a little overblown, but it was, but I stand by what I said. Mm-hmm. I actually broke down family systems and about the fact that I was sort of vacating a role. And that, once I vacated the role, somebody was going to have to fill that role in our family system. And that as long as he was abusing me, he would not have to abuse his fiance. Mm-hmm. And knowing that if I pulled the plug on continuing to show up as his victim, that he was going to have to turn it on someone. It yeah. was probably going to be her. And I yeah. felt bad for that, but that was not my problem.
And the other thing that I had, cause I was in the exact same spot. And like you said, if you unplug yourself, they're just going to plug somebody else in. But you know, a lot of my listeners know that I left my kids and what he would do when he didn't have somebody is he plugged the kids in right there, which in the right. end was good because now they understand it as well and have chosen their relationship. But you're right. You know that the minute you are out, the next
yes.
somebody else is going to have to fill it.
That's right. And I felt very bad for her, but I also, you know, like it wasn't my responsibility to keep absorbing that anymore. Like mm-hmm. I divorced him, you know,
and I, you know, people want to reach out to the fiance or they want to reach out to the girlfriend. And my standard answer is they have lessons to learn too.
That's right.
They'll be fine.
By the way, she did know because we had been friends. Our kids had all gone to preschool together. She did know in advance. And but he's a master.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so of course she was his true soulmate and like everything that, you know, that
oh, just like you were
about him. Right.
Just like,
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And you know, they are now divorcing. Surprise, surprise. But, but what I did was, so I wrote this blog post. I sort of, you know, outlined all of this and how I said, it's called, why I'm giving up my amicable divorce. And it got picked up by the Huffington Post and then it went viral. Mm-hmm. And so this is what I don't recommend. Don't write a blog post and put mm-hmm. it out in public while you're in the heat of, yes. you know, of things. But it was a very public severing. And frankly, I'm not sure how else I could have done it in that moment.
Right.
Like, well, and just
when we yeah. look back, we yeah. could regret things. But if you look back, you're right. Everything happens like it's supposed to. So if that's really happened, oh well.
Yeah. Right. And it did. It blew everything up. He like did not speak to me for a good long time. She didn't speak to me for like 4 years. He didn't speak to me other than logistics. We went straight into a very good. Strict parallel parenting relationship, which is what I recommend now for yeah. everyone to start parallel parenting. If yeah. you move into co-parenting born out of mutual respect and trust in the future, fantastic, but start with yes. parallel parenting where you have limited communication and it's only about the kids.
Yes.
You need that time to differentiate, to individuate, and to heal.
Yeah. And I think yeah. too, you know, we don't back to the part that we don't know that we don't even know we have permission to do some of this stuff. We don't think, mm-hmm. we don't even think, well, when we were in it, were we good parents together? Because chances are
nope.
you probably weren't. So
right.
what are they going to do? All of a sudden wake not up chance. And some morning and all of a sudden be a good parent. So it's that, I think it's that facade of hope that hangs on. Okay. Well now, you know, yeah, yeah it's,
yes.
it's definitely, I always say it's, there's really co-parenting, parallel parenting, maybe not. They're either parenting or they're not.
Yes.
And if they didn't parent in this, they're not going to parent in this. So figure yeah. out how to have the paperwork set so you can protect, you know, so you can protect yourself.
Absolutely. Like the more stringent your parenting plan, the better, the more sort of details you put in there. Mm-hmm. Look, if you don't need it, you don't need it. Great. But if you do, it's going to be in there because it's hard to go back and add it later.
Yes. And I always tell people, once you have that parenting plan specific, then when they ask you something, all you have to say is, what does the parenting plan say? You don't have to come up with an excuse. You don't have to defend yourself. You don't have to, you know, and I think when we come out of those, we still are fearful of them. Uh-huh. We don't know what the reactions are going to be. So we let a lot of things fall through that paperwork.
Mm-hmm. And that's right. Yes.
And we also, you probably do this too. You're so ready to be out of it that when you think about the parenting plan, you think about it in the present. Mm-hmm. You have to think about, okay, yes, but is this paperwork going to work 5 years from now? Because I don't want to be exchanging them at 10 o'clock on Christmas morning in 5 years, if I'm in a different relationship, or you can never take them anywhere for Christmas. And so, you know, you have to paperwork. I don't think people think the paperwork is as important as the paperwork is.
Yeah. Well, especially if you're not collaborative and it's not amicable, you are going to have to go by the letter of the law, which is what the parenting plan says. One of the things that I recommend is to have built into your parenting plan reassessments every couple of years, like that you will agree to meet with a parenting coordinator, you know, in 2 years to go over this to make sure it's still working for your kids, because what works for them when they're five doesn't work for them when they're 15. Mm-hmm. Like it would be absurd if you were still on the same custody schedule, the same, like all of the things, right? Yeah. Are crazy.
Yep.
To think about. It's like, you know, you choose a school, we're so like nitpicky about choosing a kindergarten. And it's like, this school is not going to be the school that is right for them when they're in middle school. Right. Like, don't even.
I know what seems important now is not, but I think the other thing that, you know, we're trained fighters. I was a trained fighter by the time I got out of my former relationship. Mm-hmm. So we just assume that everything has to be a fight when in reality, no, it doesn't. They're going to fight so they can feel like they won, but it doesn't mean you have to fight. Now in my case, I hadn't spoken to him in 12 years. So after I left, there was no communication. And there's several of my clients that absolutely have to have that, but it depends on your situation.
You know, really
the assessments are, especially if the kids are little, for sure. If somebody would have told me I would have had to do that, I would have said, yeah, no, we'll figure it out. Because I would not have wanted anything in writing that would have ever said I had to be in contact with him again.
It's a good point.
It's situation based. You know,
it really is. And, you know, everything, you know, I think that you recommend that I recommend are if that is appropriate for you. There is no, listen, you and I would be out of business if it was cookie cutter and everybody had the same process, right? We'd write a blog post and be out of business. That's not how it works, right? Everybody's situation is different. Humans are different. Our dynamics are different. And you have to do what works best for you and primarily what is safe for you.
Yes.
That's the most important.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, I do what I do because the legal system didn't work. You know, you guys all know you can't go up against the legal system with, oh, he's been emotionally abusive or she's been emotionally abusive for 20 years, because for 20 years, you never said anything about it.
And also, what is emotional abuse? We've got a court system, family court judges who are not required to have any training in coercive control or domestic violence at all. So they don't know what that means. It's, you know, it's considered, well, emotional abuse, that's subjective. You guys didn't get along. You argued.
Yes. And when you're divorcing somebody, they're not your favorite person anyway, even if it's an amicable divorce. So the legal system hears this all the time, you know, because at that point, when you're divorcing, you don't really like each other.
Right. So like everyone's divorcing a narcissist.
Yes. Okay, well, that's just in this decade. Next decade. Yeah. I always say that, you know, in the '80s, it was fibromyalgia. In the '90s, it was gluten intolerance. And now everybody's a narcissist, but, and from my standpoint, I try to teach, we like to validate that it's not us. So we go through these checklists of the diagnosis. And in the end, all we do is feel sorry for them. If we find out they have a diagnosis, it doesn't make the relationship any healthier for you. So I try to kind of pull people off the, yes, it's good for validation, but it doesn't mean you have to stay there or support any longer.
Yes.
I do want to ask you a question that it's a co-parenting question. Well, it's on that. I stayed. You probably did too, because we thought that's what was best for the kids. We don't want the kids from a broken home, and we don't want our kids to have to go through a divorce. And I'm the first one of the family that's going to get divorced, and they already think I'm nuts. And you know,
yeah, right.
So I mean, my listeners probably know my perspective of it, but when somebody is in it and you're saying it's okay to leave, the only thing they can see is their kids, and that's they right. really feel like a separation or a divorce or a change in environment or something is really going to screw up their kids. So from your perspective, can you speak on that just a little bit?
Oh, why? Yes, I can.
Are you going to talk till Tuesday? Do I need to extend the Zoom meeting? Yeah.
Possibly. look, healthy, happy homes are best for children. If your marriage is healthy and happy, then absolutely you should stay in your marriage and keep that unity. Like, why would you, right? You're not considering leaving. But the worst thing that you can do for a kid is to raise them in a toxic, abusive environment. If you're listening to my podcast, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably in some form of toxic relationship. And so that raising a child in that environment is setting them up for a number of things. Number one is to perpetuate the cycle of abuse for another generation. I just had someone in my Facebook group posting about this, about how their daughter was dating someone who was abusing her, and she was still married. And when she pointed the behavior out to the daughter, the daughter said, "Well, I've seen dad treat you worse."
Mm-hmm. My kids said the same thing.
Boom. Right? Right there and then. Yep. Boom. Right? So that's it.
So it's all they know. They don't know what normal is supposed to look like.
They don't know what love and, right? They don't know what healthy love is. And so our job is to separate out from that. Now, the other thing that people always say is, yeah, but he's still toxic. And 9 times out of 10, the court system is going to award custody if there's no physical violence against the children. Because if there's physical violence against the mom, they still think that he's an okay parent, which just don't even get me started.
Right, exactly.
But if he's going to have, parenting time with the kids, then I'm not going to be there to like mitigate it or to protect them. And if there is physical violence, you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. You may actually need to take much more aggressive action to protect your children. That doesn't mean staying, because there are these horrific laws on the books about, you know, against women who stay with abusers. And then when the kids get hurt, the women are, it's lost on me now what the name of it is called. It's,
well, they basically say, because it is like a neglect type thing. You stayed with them too long, and it's, I'm very familiar with this because they tried to pin that on. But now the term is escaping me also.
This term is escaping me too. Thank you, menopause. So it'll come back to one of us at some point. But yes, so you can be brought up on charges of being a neglectful parent and keeping your child in a dangerous situation. So that's not your best option, right? Your best option in that case is to find a domestic violence shelter in your area. I think one of the most misunderstood things about domestic violence shelters is that you don't have to go there. You don't have to live there. They have tons of resources for victims that are not the shelter itself. Yes. They have advocates, but anyway, I digress. The other thing that's important is that even if the other home continues to be toxic, as mine did for, for another decade, you are able to create a safe space for your children. And what I always say is you're giving them the gift of perspective, right? You give them the gift of going to one place and going and that it feels this way. And then they come to your house and it feels different. Mm-hmm. It is safe. They feel that they can relax. Their central nervous system actually relaxes. They are no longer in a heightened state and trauma response when they come to you. So they eventually begin to know the difference between a healthy environment and not healthy environment. And look, I'm not remarried. It is not about showing them what a healthy relationship looks like. It is just showing them what love, nurturing, and safety feels like. Yep.
And you know, I use this it where they are now. They're not safe, they're not peaceful, and they're not loved unconditionally.
That's right.
But when you are able to separate yourself, and even if it's 50-50, they have a safe, peaceful place where they're loved unconditionally. That's 50% right. of the time, which is 50% more than they have right now.
Exactly. And that gives them perspective. It gives them the opportunity to go, that's weird. That doesn't feel right. This actually feels really good.
Yeah. And you know, do you think that, you know, our persona of, but I got to stay here and protect them. I mean, I looked at it one day and I'm like, I've been here for 12 years and I haven't been able to protect them even with me being here.
You're not protecting them at all. What you're doing is you're perpetuating it and condoning it.
And yes, you're covering up, you're making excuses. You're denying it. Yes.
You're denying it. Right. And you know, even if, you know, all things sort of being quote equal, even if there's not another relationship in the other house, right. It's the sense of safety. I feel safe here. I understand what love, you begin to teach them what love is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, there's another thing that just popped into my head that I wanted to ask you about. I just answered this in my support group this week, but once you are out and there's 50-50 and the kids are going back and forth, you have to remember that the kids are still in it. Because you get aggravated when they come back from the other parent's house and they're upset and they're crying or they hate you, or, you know, you have to remember that you're now removed and they've just spent the weekend or 2 days or whatever back in that survival mode.
That's right.
And so I always just do pizza and popcorn, do pizza and puzzles, or do so the transition nights. You don't ask them questions. You don't worry about what mood they come home in, knowing if you just came out of that, you would be feeling the same way. And it's hard because we have this angst against our former, and then we see our kids come home like this. And if you could look at it from the perspective of, you know, they're still in it. You get to be out of it.
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, some of them are better at articulating it, right? You are at this point, you are now the protective parent and you are having to compensate for all of the abuse or whatever, or toxicity, maltreatment, whatever it is that's happening in the other house. And they're coming home and you're the safe one. So they can actually finally let it all out. Right. So, and sometimes that becomes, they can become more aggressive towards us, but again, that's because we're the safe one.
Yep.
And I love the idea of doing pizza, popcorn, right? Movie night. My son would articulate it very clearly when he was very young. He was about 6 years old. And he said, cause Wednesday was our transition day in the week, right? And he would say, and I would say, oh honey, you know, we have a play date with so-and-so. And he was very little, and he said, Mom, I don't want play dates on Wednesdays.
Yep.
On Wednesdays I just want to go home and be with you.
Yep.
And I was like, oh okay.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing with that is, as a parent, you can't even really grasp the thought of only having your kids half the time. So that's a big hurdle. So
that is a huge hurdle.
Just know you'll be okay. Because you know, when I left, he kept mine for 5 years. Oh. 5 years. I did not have my girls through almost their entire teenage year. And people kept saying, Heidi, just let them know that you love them and that you're going to be there and they can call you whenever they need. And by 4.5 years, I really had accepted the fact that he had ruined the relationship that I would ever have with my kids. And so I started, that's actually how this whole business started. And I started really trying to get my life back together. And they're always going to come back to the same, to their safe place, because I left them when they were 11 and 13. And they also ended up running away when they were 17 and 19. And they came 4 hours south where I was. And to this day, one of them calls me 9 times a day.
Oh.
And the other one, I mean, she lives close, so she comes over a lot. And so just know, I mean, it doesn't really help you where you're at right now, because I can say whatever I want and you're going to think, whatever, but they are always going to migrate to the safe place where they know they're accepted and where they know that they're good enough. Think about how we were never good enough in that relationship. The kids are feeling the exact same thing.
And it's, and you also have to remember that the position that they're in is that the other parent is telling them either in words or actions that they have to choose, that they're, that a relationship with you means, you know, that their love is conditional, that it means that if they do choose you, then they lose their other parent.
Right.
Your girls knew that if they left their dad for you, that they were going to lose him. That was the messaging that they had been given all along. And so it makes that decision, you know, 10 times more difficult.
And a decision that kids shouldn't have to make, you know,
go back to mine.
But for some reason we have blinders on when we're going through it. But like my 25-year-old, she's my youngest. She made the decision. She hasn't had him in her life for 5 years. She doesn't talk to him. She doesn't anything. The oldest one knows exactly how to keep herself safe. So she sees him occasionally. But that's the other thing that we're responsible for teaching them. We don't badmouth the other parent. We just say stuff like, that's how they've always been. You know, that perpetual disappointment. Well, that's always been. One of the other things I was going to say is we get very upset when they insist on talking to the kids on our time, but won't let us talk to the kids on their time, you know, but put yourself back there. You didn't talk to your friends or your mom when you were in it either, because it caused too much conflict. So the only way they're thinking is, I'd rather have mom mad at me. Now I'm speaking in genders right now, but we know it can be the other way. I'd rather have mom mad at me than dad mad at me, because mom loves me no matter what. I'm not sure about this one.
That's right. And you know, you just always let your kids know, like, I am always here for you. If you want to talk to me, you always, you know, you can always do so. And if they say dad won't let me, they say, I'm, you know, that must be really, really difficult. I'm really sorry that you're having to be put in that position. You know, that when you're here, you can always contact dad whenever you want to. And usually they don't want to.
I think the other thing, now this isn't from my experience, but you could probably confirm this, is, make sure your kids know that you're okay when they're at your former house, because the kids really worry. Well, now mom's by herself and she probably misses us. And she, you know, what's she doing? Assure them that you're okay. They don't have to worry.
You're okay. You have a life. You have, you know, there are a couple of issues that come up with when people say to me, like, I can't be without my kids. Right. The first thing I say is, okay, well, let's talk about your identity. Because listen, as women, as mothers, you know, it's very easy for, especially if we've been stay-at-home moms, right? Our identity becomes motherhood. And that's dangerous, right?
Or whatever room we're in.
Whoever's
in the room, then we put that hat on,
basically. Exactly. And that's like, I don't know a lot of men who are like, I can't be without my kids. I don't know who I am without my kids. Like, I just don't. Like, I can't even imagine that coming out of a man's mouth.
No, I can imagine it coming out of a man's mouth, but it's because they're trying to take them from you. It's not because they don't want their kids.
That's right. They say that in court. They don't actually feel it.
Right.
But so I think that that's an important piece, like, is that we have to work on your identity. We have to look at this from an identity standpoint. And if what your fear is for their safety, then that's another thing that we have to be looking at. But it's very important when, especially if your kids are having some separation anxiety, when you're hugging them and it's going to be okay, honey, and all of that, like, you're perpetuating that anxiety for them. So your job is to be like, it's okay, honey, everything's going to be great. I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be doing whatever. And I will see you on the other side. Right. Yeah. Like, very, very, unattached to the anxiety. Like, 'cause when we try to make it better for them, then what it does is it confirms for them that there's actually something to be anxious about.
If mom's okay, the kids are okay. If mom's upset, the kids are upset. If mom's anxious, the kids are anxious, or vice, you know, whatever, the situation is, but,
Absolutely.
Well, let the listeners know where they can find more information about you and your programs and, you know, your support group and anything that we need to know to get closer to Kate.
Ah, you're the best. Thank you. My website is kateanthony.com and pretty much everything is there. On Instagram and TikTok, I am at The Divorce Survival Guide, my podcast. is the Divorce Survival Guide podcast. And I have, you know, I've got a bunch of programs, I've online programs for deciding whether to stay or go and actually getting through the divorce process. And then I also have a group, wonderful group coaching program and private coaching, obviously, as well. And my Should I Stay or Should I Go Facebook group, which is on Facebook.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, all that information. Thanks for taking the time today. I know that you're busy, busy, busy. And if I get questions, I mean, we might have to have you back because people love getting different, you know, perspectives on things.
Yes, I would love to anytime. And I would love to.
And since I know our perspective is the same, you're one that I will allow on here. No.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
No, it's good. Cause you know, sometimes we get into conversations with people and we're like, I don't want to argue with my guests, but also like, what?
I know. Yeah. I feel that way when I have to talk to attorneys occasionally, you know, I don't want to say this, but yeah.
But actually,
thank you so much. And I'll be in touch. We'll get you back on here, I'm sure, because I've already thought of a couple other topics that I'd like to pick your brain on. So
I love it. And thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure.